All right, book club day 27. Great to see you again. Excited for today's episode. At the beginning of 27, we have on the first page, I think, a very good line. He says, "Anything, even a sin, which has the total effect of moving him close up to the enemy, makes against us in the long run." This is something I think that is really interesting and kind of leads into the next part on the second page on prayer, is that God can use things, the devil can use things. A lot of it depends on how we view the world, how we respond to the things that happen to us in our lives, and whether or not we give God the benefit of the doubt or the world the benefit of the doubt. What I mean by that, if you go on to the next page here, you've got in that second paragraph towards the bottom, "Don't forget to use the heads I win, tails you lose argument," right? This can be used from either the worldly perspective or from the Christian perspective when it comes to petitionary prayer, right? So he says here, if the thing he prays for doesn't happen, then that is one more proof that petitionary prayer does not work. If it does happen, he will, of course, be able to see some of the physical causes which led up to it, and therefore it would have happened anyway. And thus a granted prayer becomes just as good to us a proof as a denied one that prayers are ineffective. Sorry, I read that kind of weird, like an idiot, but you get the point there, that if you have this worldly perspective and you doubt prayer, you don't believe in prayer, you don't believe in God, whatever have you, whatever doubts you might have in your life, and I'm talking serious doubt, like you're making more of the argument that God doesn't exist or that prayer doesn't work than you are the opposite, then you're going to interpret things this way, right? You're going to interpret things, if you ask for something in prayer and you don't get it, it's just going to be like, God's not listening, God's not real, God doesn't care about me, etc. On the other hand, if you do have a relationship with God, if you do have a belief in God, if you're striving to be a faithful person, then when you get something that you receive, right? If you do receive something in prayer that you ask for, or if you receive something that you ask for in prayer, then you're going to offer up glory to God. You're going to say, thanks be to God that this happened. This is because of my relationship with the Lord. If you don't receive it, then you're going to say, hey, this must not be in God's plan for my life. This must not be God's will. That's why I didn't receive this thing. And you're going to interpret the situation optimistically, hopefully, faithfully. And that, I think, ultimately is the difference between people who end up believing and not believing in their lives. And those are subtle differences. And I think this book is so good at helping us to realize that. Sometimes I think we really underestimate how our outlook on life, our framework through which we see the world, our perspective, really, really determines whether or not we remain in the faith or not. Because exactly that, you see the same thing happens when somebody gets a really bad diagnosis or some other tragedy strikes, right? You lose your job, something bad happens. And you can say, God has a plan. God must have a plan for me. God's going to continue to provide for me. What the scripture says is true. What the church teaches is true. And I still believe that in these hard times. Or if your faith is built on sand, as Jesus depicts in the scriptures, right, in certain parables, then when these things happen, when the storm comes and the wind blows, your whole house crumbles. Your entire belief system, your entire faith just gets shot. And you see this, it's really tragic, but you hear this in a lot of stories, right? People who say, I told God if he healed my mother or something like that along those lines, that I would believe in him, that I would serve him, etc. And God a lot of times is not interested in that. There's some stories of that where people do get what they ask for in prayer and they turn their lives around. They actually commit their lives to Christ. A lot of people, I think, whether they get what they want or they don't, what you do in your faith after that is determinant what you believe is true or not. That's something we don't understand and believe enough, especially when it comes to some of those things. When you're talking about being hurt by people of the church, then I think you introduce a different dimension into some of this stuff. But as far as just the general struggles and difficulties of life, the brokenness of the world, the results of sin and death, that's just how life is, right? We know that these things are coming. We know that suffering is coming. God doesn't promise us just prosperity, doesn't promise us that all will be well all of the time, right? He says that we're going to go through difficult times. And so knowing that when we face those things, whether we really believe in him or not is tested. And I don't know that God gives us these things to test us, but I do know that he wants us to remain faithful until the end. And so it's all about our perspective and how we see these things. The next thing that I think is really interesting is this idea of, he kind of gets into free will here on page 150. He says, why the creative act leaves room for their free will is a problem of problems. The secret behind the enemy's nonsense about love, how it does, is no problem at all. For the enemy does not foresee the humans making their free contributions in a future, but sees them doing so in his unbounded now. And obviously to watch a man doing something is not to make him do it. This is something I think is really, really important. If you ever get in debates with people on the idea of free will, predestination, how does God know what we're going to do? How do we have free will if God knows what we're going to do? And this comes to a lot of things, right? Even if you're debating the Trinity or other things, is that we recognize as a church, as the faithful here on earth, we have a lot of limitations, right? We don't understand things fully. We understand that as far as the stars are above the earth, so is God's ways and God's way of thinking above man's ways and man's ways of thinking. And so we don't understand all this stuff. And we believe that in heaven, everything will make sense and everything will be clear and we'll understand it all. But one of the biggest things is this concept of time. We experience time every passing second, minute, hour, day, week, month, year. We think about the future, the present, and the past, right? And this is why earlier in the book, you remember talking about how the present meets eternity, right? Because it's in this moment that we are actively conscious. This is the only moment that we have, and it's the now, right? The present time where we actually are conscious, where we can't do anything that impacts, we can do things that set us up or impact the future, I guess. We can't change anything from the past. All we can control really is what we do right now. I can't control myself in the future right now. I can only control me right now, right? And so that's how we think of things. And so we think of, if God knows what I'm going to do next, does that mean he's making me do it? God is totally outside of this. This is a debate sometimes we have, Emily and I, or just with friends, is we like to talk about when you're in heaven, do you think that everybody that ever goes to heaven is already in heaven? Meaning, like, say Emily and I both go to heaven, but I die 10 years before her. When I die, will she already be in heaven? Because heaven is outside of time and space. Is heaven like watching this stuff as it goes down? Or is it more of what he's describing here, this kind of unbounded now where you can just see all of human history, all of world history and history of the universe, all of it is just kind of available, right? This is what's complex. And we really have no way of knowing what the human experience is, but we do believe that God, being fully outside of time and space, being fully knowledgeable, fully powerful, that he is not seeing things go day by day. He's not just watching the sunrise and all of that. He sustains all of this stuff, but to him, it's kind of like already happened, always happening in the past, in the future. Like it's crazy. It's impossible to conceive and understand for us who live in time and space, what it's like to live outside of it. But that's where God is. And so he is watching what we're doing, not forcing us to do things, always calling us back, always intervening in our lives, guiding our lives for those who are faithful. But he doesn't force us to do things. And this is, I think, is the really important thing. It's similar, I think, to debates I've seen between Muslims and Christians when they criticize the Old Testament and they criticize the Bible. And it's like they're refusing to understand a lot of times or see the Bible the way that we see it, to having this kind of understanding, this assumption that this belief that the Old Testament was the Old Covenant, New Testament is the New Covenant. So we're not beholden to the things of the Old Testament. They don't apply to modern day Christianity, right? We don't practice the law of Moses as the primary example. You know, we still believe in the things that happen there. We still believe they inform our faith, but we're not beholden to them as a moral law as the Jews were, 3,000 years ago. And the similar thing here is you have to be willing to understand that God is outside of time and space if you're going to understand the concept of free will. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. If you believe that this is all that there is, then it's hard to kind of get to that point of understanding. Last little bit here on page 150 says that, Screwtape says, only the learned read old books, and we have now so dealt with the learned that they are of all men the least likely to acquire wisdom by doing so. That is really profound. He says kind of he goes into this historical point of view and basically says that the goal was to get the learned. And you can think of this, for me, it's academics. For me, it's the people that are leading universities and doing all this crazy stuff that we see in today's world. That you're able to get them to never question whether anything is true. Right? Only the academics are reading these old books. Socrates, Aristotle, and all these kind of like ancient books and things like that. And they're so far gone. They're so have so abandoned the idea of universal truth and have so embraced relativism that they're unlikely to acquire any wisdom by truly reading these old books, by going through them, by spending time in them, right? And so I think that's really, really interesting. Obviously, we want to break that. I don't know if we want to consider ourselves the learned or if we just want to break that idea that only the learned read old books. But that's something that is on my to-do list. Emily and I have been going through what books we want to read for next year. And so I've got some great ones on there, like St. John of the Cross and Crime and Punishment and things like that. Obviously, Crime and Punishment, I mean, because they're that old. If you're thinking about books that are 1,000 years old, but or 2,000 years old. But some of these older books, right, not just reading new Harry Potter and 50 Shades of Grey and other nonsense that doesn't actually contribute to you growing in your life or becoming a better person. It's obviously fine to read, I think, things for fun. I'm currently right now reading Straight Shooter by Stephen A. Smith, his memoir, which I've actually really enjoyed. I didn't know how I'd feel about it. My mom got it for me, and I do love Stephen A. I know this is kind of highly controversial because a lot of people don't like him, but and I don't agree with everything he says for sure, but I really appreciate watching him, and his story has been really interesting to learn about. But as I'm also doing that, I'm also reading Screwtape Letters of Soul of the Apostolate and this new book, The True Meaning of Christmas, that Emily and I are going through together. So it's good to have a combination of things that you're reading for pleasure and things you're reading for growth and faith and to find more truth, right? Always be pursuing the truth. All right. God bless you. Be your best, and we'll see you tomorrow.